CliffCentral.com.
Hello, sexy people. Hello, Monday. Hello, Gareth.
Hey, Ben. How's it, man?
Yeah, solid, man. How you doing?
Good. Can you hear me properly?
It is so good. It's like you're here.
Yes, but I actually don't like that. You said, hello, sexy people, then hello, Gareth. What are you saying about Gareth, Ben?
Well, it's just that Gareth's in Germany, so therefore he can't be sexy right now. only South African people are sexy on a Monday. Look at us. Look at us shining. Okay, well, look at you shining.
Well, that's true. You had a long weekend over the weekend. It was a normal weekend for everyone in Europe.
Yeah, but your Instagram feed suggests that you were having a fantastic European summer's time.
Listen, I mean, I know that if I were back home, I would have had a chilled weekend. I might have done one or two things. But my God, the things I've got done in the last 4 days are unbelievable. I've been in Berlin and Bonn, and I'll give you all the details. But if you want to see the pictures, they're all over Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm trying to keep everybody updated so that it's not just me on this trip, it's everybody.
But you're having such a good time, you even had beer. Now, that's very out of character for you.
Well, when in Rome, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you
exactly.
You don't go to Italy and not have pizza, pasta, and wine. You don't come to Germany and not have Wurst and Kartoffelsalat and beer. So I think it's appropriate. Anyway, it's very good beer, and I don't drink a lot of it. So I thought, well, what the hell? And I'm walking such a lot that there's no way the calories are going to hit me.
Yeah, that's always the cool thing about doing these European trips, especially in summer. You're walking so much, and you're seeing all the sights. And these cities are so great because you've got all these old buildings, all these different attractions. And it's life that's kind of orientated towards walking around, the street cafes, all that kind of stuff. So it's very healthy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I've probably covered, I don't know, it feels like about 20, 30 kilometers, but it's probably more.
Oh, very good. Because remember, whenever you go to New York, you always come back quite fat.
Thanks very much, Ben.
This is starting off on a great note, this entire show.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So, Gareth, Bonn and Berlin, if people don't know Germany too well, obviously Bonn is... Okay. Yeah, so what's the sort of difference?
Let's start with Berlin. It's the capital city. It's located in the northeast of Berlin. It's obviously the most famous city in Europe, in Germany, because it was the capital of the Third Reich. And after that, it was divided into four different zones by the Allies and Russia. Well, the Allies, essentially the victors of the war. Mm-hmm. So immediately after World War II, 1945, the place was pretty much reduced to rubble. 70% of Berlin was destroyed. They have so much rubble from World War II that they built a mountain, which is the highest mountain in Berlin, out of rubble only.
Oof. Just imagine the mountain that Damascus could then build.
Yeah, well, I don't think Damascus would get close, because even if you see pictures of Damascus now, or you go into Google Earth and you take a look at the city of Damascus in Syria, you'll see that it's pretty bummed out. But what Berlin looked like after World War II... I go and do a Google search on Berlin 1945 and take a look at even aerial pictures. There was, I mean, you'd struggle to find a brick piled upon a brick.
And it's a shame because, like, it was really nice architecture. It wasn't like they were knocking down face brick, townhouses.
Well, beautiful is one thing, but I mean, it was just the soul of the city was ripped out because obviously the country had to be beaten in order for the Allies to win the war. And this is what a lot of people who don't study history don't bother to find out. But, I mean, Germany took a massive, massive hit, which makes it all the more impressive that it's now the second biggest economy in the world.
Wow.
That is, to me, something worth telling a story about. Now, the other story is obviously that after World War II, The city was divided up and the country was divided up. There was East Germany and West Germany. West Germany was administered by France, by America, and by Britain. And East Germany was administered by the USSR, as it was at the time. And then Berlin itself was divided into the same four quadrants. There was an American quarter, there was a French quarter, there was a British quarter, and then there was the Russian quarter. Now, I stayed in a hotel in what was formerly East Berlin, and it's a beautiful hotel. East Berlin was most of the old CBD of Berlin. And during communism, during the time of the wall, which was put up in the 60s, when Russia actively tried to prevent people from crossing into the west of Berlin, because obviously life was much more horrible under communism than it was under capitalism.
Yeah.
And it was hard for everybody, but it was much, much harder for the people in the east. They decided to build an actual wall and keep people in. And it lasted until 1989. So if you think about timelines here, Berlin 30 years ago, 27 to 30 years ago, was a very different place to what it is now. And that's about the amount of time that we've been a new nation in South Africa. And it's kind of embarrassing when you compare what's gone on in Berlin to what's happening back home, because we're still buggering around. Growth is down. We're not able to get our shit together.
Yeah.
And it kind of put everything in perspective for me, because as much as I don't like to compare things with our story is very unique. There are a lot of things we can learn from this. The first thing is that authoritarianism will never beat democracy. So at least that part we've got right. Capitalism will always beat communism. That part some people still seem to think is questionable, but I defy you to find better examples than East Berlin and West Berlin and North Korea and South Korea. And you tell me which works better. Mm. And then you've got the German people themselves, who are, I mean, they're fascinating people. They're not the kind of people that I've always said anything except funny things about, but they're stoic, they're determined, they're very serious. I mean, we got to the hotel in Bonn yesterday and asked something of the woman at the counter, and she said, "No, this is not possible." And that's the answer. No, this is not possible. So you don't argue with them, you don't fight with them. You know, it's that's how they think. It's either possible or it's not possible. That's it. They don't go, let me see what I can do. They go, "No, this is not possible." So they're very, very strange people.
What wasn't possible?
I can't remember what it was, like a room with a view of the street or something. I can't remember.
But it's an interesting perspective there, because you just assume, you know, Germany first world, and for people who didn't understand the Second World War, ramifications of it, the Cold War, communism, all that kind of stuff, it is a great sort of thing to look across as a comparison. As you say, South African situation is very unique and it's very difficult to compare, and always a fruitful endeavor a lot of the time. But it has
South
been.
Africa at its worst, at its very worst, was never as bad for the entire country of South Africa as Germany after 1945.
Yeah.
It was nothing. It was reduced to absolute rubble. They had no economy. They had no government. They had very few people. The female population outnumbered the male population by something like 5 to 1. And that rubble hill that I was telling you about earlier, mm-hmm. the mountain of rubble that's the highest point in Berlin, all of that was built by women with wheelbarrows because there were no men to do the work.
Wow. So that's why German women were so strong in the Olympics, I guess, from like the 60s onwards.
No, that was East German women, and we know why. Come on, Ben.
Yeah, but the whole thing about losing your identity, which is another big thing for countries, like you said, the East and West were separated and essentially under administration from a country other than its own. Like that's something I totally forgot. And that's very mm-hmm. – like how do you build on the back of that? Because now you always have other influences, and still they managed to get a united Germany out of that.
Yeah, it's a really remarkable story, and I think anybody who has been to a city like Berlin will have an idea of how much history. Again, I'm a history fan. I don't expect everyone to be such a fan of history, but it was phenomenal. I also met our listener Stefan.
All right.
He's one of our super fans here, and he took me around on Friday night last week. And we got to see some of the bars and restaurants and kind of the nightlife of Berlin. But I can tell you all about that in the next few days. I'm in Bonn at the moment, and we're doing this conference today. But how was Father's Day? Did South Africa have a really happy Father's Day? I somehow guess not.
Well, Gareth, none of us here in studio, of course, fathers. So Yeah, I guess from a primary perspective. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
from a primary perspective. Well, you know, I went down to Durban for the long weekend, which was so good and so worth it.
And how did that trip go? Because you were saying there might be some quibbles because you are driving, but your mother's going to be there, and then there were siblings involved.
Yeah, well, it was my mother and my nephew.
Your nephew.
Yeah, left the office actually at like 3 p.m. on Thursday, mind you.
Because you work hard nowadays, I must give you that.
Well, thank you very much for the gold star to me. But I actually ended up leaving Joburg because of everyone and all of their drama, probably at about like 7 p.m.
No.
And shit you not, ended up arriving in Durban at our home at like 2 a.m.
See, that is terrible.
Oh, wow.
And also relatively dangerous.
Exactly. Because A, there was so much traffic on the way down because everyone was trying to leave for the long weekend. But then also, as predicted, my mother had way too many stops. My nephew was getting restless. You know, they were getting hungry for this and then a pee break there. Then we wanted to see this. And basically, like, we were 2 seconds away from killing each other by 2 a.m. But it was so good. The weekend was well worth it. What I realize now is, like, all the social butterfly stuff is so overrated. Mm-hmm. You know, like, stay at home, invite people over. You can stay in your pajamas the entire day. And that's totally fun. And also, like, afterwards, you don't need a weekend from your weekend. You know when you go on holiday and you need a holiday from your holiday because you were doing way too much? That's not the point of it anymore.
Jeepers, look at this. He's evolving in front of our very eyes.
And then also, as I said last week, which like worked well in my favor because I totally forgot the whole Father's Day train. My father was away on a conference this weekend, so I didn't even get to see him. So it was like a little score on my corner. So yeah, good weekend all in all.
Sure.
Well, listen, I heard that there was some noise over an insurance commercial and everybody in South Africa got upset about this because, you know, because it's insurance's fault you don't have a dad. Anyway, the point is, you know what, South Africans, I mean, like, there are a lot of people in SA who are going through a lot of pain, and I get that. And I'm sure that it must be really, really hard to see a whole lot of people saying, I love you, Dad. Thank you, Dad. Happy Father's Day, when you don't have one and your dad doesn't care about you. It must be awful. It must be one of the most horrible feelings in the world. So I'm not unsympathetic to those people. But you can't take that out on outsurance just because they had an ad that wasn't diverse enough to show that there are families without dads. I mean, that's ridiculous. Why make a Father's Day ad at all? And maybe outsurance shouldn't have. Who knows? That's a whole controversy we can get into. By the way, if you're wondering where my buddy is, she's on her way in. Yes. I received a message from her now. So if you guys are wondering, she's on her way.
She'll be all right.
So, you know, she'll be all right. Father's Day in South Africa will always be a very finicky thing just because of our state of dads and father figures in South Africa as it is, full stop. So it started off with a lot of people saying, you know, why are so many single mothers trying to ruin Father's Day for those families who actually do have fathers? So that was the whole thing on social media, firstly. And we have that without fail every single year. Because, you know, there are a lot of, you know, women-headed households and single mothers were saying, well, excuse me, I was the mother and the father, so I also deserve this day. And then outsurance, you know, they harmlessly, seemingly, released an ad celebrating fathers. But the backlash that, you know, they got was that it was a lot of white fathers. Well, not even a lot of, but only white fathers. And then certain people like Hlomla Dandala were chiming in saying, hold up, but I'm a good father. You know, where am I? And then Rami Chwene was actually one of the main voices. You know, hey, maybe we should talk to her if she comes in earlier about like what she thinks of it, because she was saying, you know, there's so many other images that you could have used of fathers, especially in South Africa.
And I wouldn't get the wrong side of Rami either, huh? Hey, I reckon she'll put it to you quickly.
Hey, so yeah, people had a lot to say, but hey, this is exactly why we're having the fatherhood conversation this week on the show, Gareth, right?
Well, we've got different people we're talking to all of this week, and I would suggest if you are one of those people who's either very, very upset about the whole insurance commercial, or if you're one of those people who thinks that it's an overreaction, to listen to all the interviews this week. We talked to Dumisho and his dad. We talked to the author of a book called Dad, Craig Wilkinson, who's written extensively about this and works with, you know, mother-headed households, people who've grown up without father figures, he really is knee deep in this stuff in South African society. And if you really care and you don't just want to be outraged on Twitter and you're not just looking for attention on Twitter and you want to understand the situation and the depth of the problem in South Africa, then listen to Craig. He's on this week. We've also got interviews with other well-known South Africans, Brett and Keith Lindsay. We've got who am I leaving out?
Yeah, we have Sipho Mbele as well.
Sipho Mbele, who wrote a book about this. Yeah, there's some very, very interesting people all about this whole idea that South African men are trash, but then happy Father's Day. You know, it's a complicated situation, obviously.
Yeah, I do love that. I think we hit the nail on the head with getting this wide spectrum and various opinions on the role of fathers, you know, father figures and men in general in South Africa as well. So it'll be a very awesome week of conversations that, you know, you pre-recorded just before you left.
Gareth, just getting back to you now, and obviously the nature of your trip, what are we going to kind of expect from you as far as updates are concerned? Because your weekend looked really cool from like a touristy perspective, but you are actually there to do some proper work, aren't you?
Yeah, today is the beginning of the conference. It's called the Global Media Forum. It's being held here in Bonn. It's 3 days, well, 2.5 days of people delivering speeches, hosting panel discussions about everything to do with identity, diversity, free expression, the future of the media, what kind of world we're going into in media terms, and digital media and the role of digital media in this whole mix of stuff that we have and that people can choose from in 2017. So it's a really interesting place to be. We're going to have some amazing speakers. So I'm looking forward to a lot of the presentations that will be made. I think some of these people are the leaders in their fields from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And because we're in the city that gave birth to Beethoven, it all starts this morning with a little Beethoven concert for 15 minutes. And then I think the Minister of Communication and Broadcasting here in Germany will do the opening address. And then we go into discussions from people from all over the world and their understanding of the media environment, their understanding of what free expression means, how the digital world is impacted on traditional media. And pretty much a beginning to end status quo of what's going on in media and a look at what's happening and what's likely to happen in the future. Very, very exciting stuff. This is the real reason I'm here, and I'm part of a panel that will be addressing this, particularly social media and digital media in a world where you have divided societies, like we do in South Africa a lot of the time. You know, we proudly say black Twitter exists, and we say there's white privilege, and these are clearly divided societies, but they both can be found swimming in the world of Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and how do they interact with each other? That's part of what I'll be talking about.
Well, good luck trying to describe Sunday black Twitter. I think you'll divide an audience there just trying to describe what's going on.
I think it's even harder to describe black Twitter on Father's Day, but we'll try.
All right, and are they going to be like sort of high-profile speakers, or is it more just something around topics and content rather than big names setting this thing?
No, there will be high-profile speakers, but a lot of them are probably not going to be famous people. So it's not like a celebrity fest. It's not, you know, South by Southwest, there were a lot more celebrities because, first of all, it's in America.
Yeah.
And second of all, this is not a topic that – it's not the sexiest topic in the world, but I think it's one of the most important.
Well, it's not exactly going to go away either, so it's definitely something worth discussing. Yes. Just picking up a message here on WeChat. If you want to message in and you want to ask Gareth some questions throughout the week, he will be with us, 079-748-2090. Here's a message from yesterday on the Father's Day topic. To all the single moms who bitch on Father's Day, why should their bad choice in men or inability to make sure protection is used be reflected on a day when there are actual good fathers? Wow.
Well, yeah, you know, this is the problem too, is like people are going to stand up for their side of the argument and they're not going to think about the other people's side of the argument. And I feel genuinely sorry for people who don't have a father or a relationship with their father or anything else. And there are lots and lots of very hurt, very bruised, very, very, very sad people who have every reason to feel that way. I'm not going to take away that feeling from them. But what you've got to realize is that the world isn't just about you. And that's what I'm realizing by saying that. I didn't post anything for Father's Day because I thought, well, I can phone my dad and I can WhatsApp him and I can tell him, hey, happy Father's Day. And For some people, that's not possible. I don't need to put it all over social media and say, oh, my dad is the best dad, and make people who don't have a dad feel bad. We have had this discussion with Mother's Day, remember?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And we said, you know, it's so unfair to people who don't have a mom to have to hear how everybody else has the best mom in the world. But I suppose to each his own. It doesn't hurt to say what you think and get out there with whatever it is that's on your mind about things like this. You don't have to necessarily take a strong viewpoint on it, but it is interesting to watch because it does tell you something about how South African society is less about race and more about the family unit not necessarily working for everybody.
But just
because that's the truth.
But just on the matter of social media, I know some people love to get outraged and they say primary use for Twitter and all these things. That's cool. If that's your thing, and if like watching car crash porn is another thing, everyone's got a thing, right? But why if people get outraged, why don't just use social media better from here on forward? Search hashtags, search things that maybe be of interest. If you're spending your day just scrolling up a feed, maybe you should do more with your life as well. Like this whole mind-numbing crap that people expose themselves to, they become like zombies to trash like this, and they become trash.
Yeah, that's true. But you're not going to change some people's behavior, Ben. And who's to say that you and I are right? Who's to say that we're searching the right stuff?
No, but you get people who are so angry and so obviously upset, Gareth. That's my point, is that maybe they should change their behavior rather than just always be looking for blame.
Well,
my buddy Malloy.
Are these people... are these people any more useful than, I don't know, people posting naked pictures of themselves? I mean, all social media is...
Well, I mean...
There you go. All social,
what would we do without them?
All social media is useless to a degree. It's just... It's all mind-numbing to a degree. So pick your evil.
That's exactly right.
Stay off the nudes, though. But how was your long weekend, Mubs?
It was good. We're checking in with Gareth. That's far more interesting.
No, we've been checking Gareth the whole time. Sierra and I are bored stiff. Yeah. Amanda, what happened with your long weekend?
I had a really good weekend.
You seem somewhat sedated today than usual.
No, it was chilled and it was crazy and it was cool.
Jeepers, between you and my buddy, somebody's on the go here.
These people will pry them open soon enough. Just let us in. Let's see.
All right, Gareth. So when does the Beethoven thing start? Have we got you for a little bit longer?
You got me until 7. I would be remiss if I told you that I knew exactly what time it started, but I know we have to leave here somewhere around 8. So look, there's lots I can tell you. What do you want to know? Because Berlin was fascinating. I know my buddy's been to Germany before. She went to you were in Munich, right?
I was in Munich, yes, for a few days and then went over to, I can't remember the little town's place, but it was in the countryside, to recover from Oktoberfest. So it was a good, it was a good balance.
From Oktoberfest to Oktoberrest.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful country. Summer is obviously in full swing here. So expected temperature today is 32 degrees. But here are some interesting things. I took a picture of the Berlin Gate when I left the Brandenburg Gate when I left Berlin on last night? Two nights ago. And I took the picture at 11 o'clock. And if you go and look at it, it's still light.
And
there's still a bit of sunlight in the sky. And at 11 o'clock at night. And
significance of that gate?
Light early in the morning too.
Sorry, Gareth, and the significance of that gate?
Well, that used to be the entrance, the ceremonial entrance to Berlin. And during the Cold War, during the time of the wall, it was a no man's land. No one in the east or the west could get to it. So they would look at it from both sides and they would be able to hear other people on the other side, but you couldn't get to it. There was no one passed through it for 30, 40 years.
Wow.
And then they opened it up in 1989, 1990. And that was the scene of where everybody kind of got together and celebrated. And every year they celebrate the reunification of Germany at the Brandenburg Gate. So it's sort of a symbol of Germany since reunification. It's a symbol of Berlin. And it was also like the center of the city. So for many people, it's symbolic because – if you look at pictures if you Google Brandenburg Gate 1945, you'll see that there's just sandbags and rubble and ruins all around it. Somehow most of the gate survived. The quadriga, which is the statue on top, was destroyed. It was still there, but it was bent and gnarled and knocked out of shape by bombs. Hmm. So it just, again, puts the suffering of Germany into perspective. And it is phenomenal to imagine that a country that 70-odd years ago was zeroed, it was absolutely leveled to the ground. A country that had nothing to speak of post-1945 because they'd gone to war with the rest of the world and with civilization. So in many ways, that's what people say Germany deserved, and they probably did. To have started from scratch, this is a nation that started from absolutely zero. They've gone to being the world's second biggest economy.
Well, speaking of Germans, I've been watching that show, The Crown, which is very, very interesting, but I'll get into that later in the show. And when do you get to meet Angela Merkel?
No, I don't think I'm going to meet Angela Merkel. We did drive past her office, though. And the nice thing, Berlin has more parks than any other city in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of greenery, and they're very into green energy here. So you don't see chimneys pouring out smoke and oil and coal and that kind of thing. Everybody uses solar, wind, renewable. That's what they like to do, and they're very proud of it here. So there's quite a lot of that, despite it being quite an industrial country. Mm. And where I am at the moment in Bonn, on the Rhine River, it's like the oldest artery into central and western Germany. It's a huge river. It's wide. It's about 500 meters to almost a kilometer in some places wide.
That's incredible.
It's a huge, huge river. And you've got constant boat traffic up and down. Of course, in the 1900s, the early 1900s, and even before that, in the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution, this was the main sort of thoroughfare for all German trade, commerce, industry. So you had coal, you had iron, you had manufacturing, you had trading, all of that stuff along the Rhine River. And it was then that the Germans really established themselves as the kind of major industrial power of Europe.
Hmm. Yeah, and they really messed it up. It's like the Thames back in the day was so brown and filthy and horrendous, but all these industrial ages didn't do much for the waterways. Yeah. I've been to the source of the Rhine on the three tall mountains and this beautiful glacier, yeah. Europe just does have so many amazing attractions. But speaking of amazing attractions, Gareth, it's time for my buddy's news.
Excellent.
Right, and you know what else it is? It's Monday.
Ah,
so you know what that means? 2-for-1 at Kalkakio. I did this last week. It was very rewarding. Value for money, great pizza. And, of course, this is the reason you crave pizza, isn't it, Notsia?
Rewarding twice over.
Yeah, so 2-for-1.
On the pocket and the taste buds, hey?
2-for-1 at Kalkakio. Get on down there. Get the app. Check out your local stories. Mabali Maloy, what's going on in the news?
Well, there are calls for the government to now urgently intervene and address the crippling strike by employees at the province's mortuaries. Ooh.
Oh, yes. Oh. I remember the story last week.
Yeah, I told you about it on Thursday morning about how the SANDF had now also gotten involved to try and help with the process of speeding up post-mortems, which have led to, you know, bodies piling up to paint a very grim picture. But the Democratic Alliance has now criticized the Premier, David Makhura, saying that he has been missing from the crisis. Workers at certain government mortuaries have been on strike, refusing to conduct post-mortems, demanding similar benefits to pathologists. Yesterday, on Saturday, a Muslim family won a court order to perform an autopsy on their loved one after the deceased's death and after his body had basically, you know, spent time in the mortuary for 2 weeks.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's such a grim picture to try and imagine because, I was saying last week, you know, people have funerals to plan. They have, you know, they have to move on and to get, you know, get over things, and then like a problem like this must just add on to the grief of it all. So now, you know, there's calls for the Gauteng government to stand up and do something about it.
Yeah, you know, this has also been seen coming into light because of, you know, famed Yizo star Jabu Christopher Kubega, who recently passed away. He was meant to be buried on Saturday, but because of the strike as well, his funeral has been postponed till Wednesday. This seemingly Wednesday, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So he's one of the high profile people who've now come into light because of this. Like, imagine so many more families are going through this. And you think of, you know, Muslim families as well. They don't, I think, according to Muslim custom, you're meant to be buried before sunset again.
That's something like that. Yeah, it's very immediate.
Muslim and Jewish families, the day after you die, you've got to be buried. And it's that means you've got one day to get it right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, can you imagine how that feels? It's bad enough you've lost your relative. Now you have to put up with this crap.
Shucks. And you think of now, and we know how it's like in our country after a long weekend, people being reckless on the roads, how the death toll must have gone up.
Sure.
And the backlog going on there. Shucks.
And then raging forest fires in central Portugal, done tremendous damage here. At least 62 people who lost their lives, many of them because they had been trapped in their vehicles as flames swept over a road. The Prime Minister yesterday calling this the biggest tragedy that the country has experienced in years. It was all because of a lightning strike that is believed to have sparked the blaze in the Pedregal Grande area after investigators found that a tree was hit during a dry thunderstorm. Now, dry thunderstorms are apparently frequent when falling water evaporates before reaching the ground because of high temperatures. And Portugal, like most southern European countries, is prone to forest fires in the dry summer months. They are now in the first day of an official 3 days of mourning that has been declared for the victims in the blaze. I mean, what?
Well, you know, we had Neisner just a couple of days ago, and everybody was upset about that because obviously people lost their homes, people lost their lives. It was a very sad situation, and the same is happening in Portugal on a very grand scale. I mean, the center of the country is basically on fire, and it's very sad. And the other big European story over the weekend was the fire in that building in London, the Grenfell Tower, where, again, I think it was 50 people lost their lives, 50 or more people. And it just seems like fire is a very serious problem for humanity at the moment, even if it's just in South Africa and here in Europe. And you can't compare one tragedy with another, and it's not about death tolls. But it's awful to see that these people lose everything, if not a family member, all of their worldly possessions. And it's very, very sad.
Absolutely, Gareth. I mean, that fire in Portugal, for example, saw over 300 firefighters trying to control that blaze. You know, it went on for over a 24-hour period because they were struggling to just put this thing out. And yeah, like you said, 62 people losing their lives is very tragic indeed. So, yeah, I'm sorry, my mistake. 700 firefighters and 350 soldiers who all joined efforts over the weekend to try and control that blaze.
Sure. Yeah, it's the sheer numbers, huh? Sheer numbers of these things, and it's how devastating they are and how quickly these things happen as well.
Yeah. And then the high-profile case accusing Bill Cosby of aggravated indecent assault ended in a mistrial over the weekend. This was after a Pennsylvania jury was unable to come to a unanimous decision. It was a jury of 7 men and 5 women who essentially were deadlocked. The judge, Stephen O'Neill, therefore declaring it a mistrial and saying to the jurors, "Do not feel like you've let the justice system down. It's not a failure or a victory." And then outside court, Cosby, the 79-year-old, was said to have been very silent, but his spokesman, Andrew Wyatt, pumping his fist in the air and declaring that Cosby's power is back. And that's a quote taken from the spokesperson.
What a dick. Power.
Really?
What does that even mean?
Well, it means, Ben, that Bill Cosby has been a victim up until now, and now he's got his power back, according to his spokesperson.
Well, I can almost see it becoming a mistrial because, Gareth, last week we were discussing this, and Sia was, you know, putting the whole story out there about the thing is, you know, if you know you're taking the pills, are you then a victim, blah, blah, blah. Wow, do we get some fiery messages in the WeChat?
Yeah. Mm.
Steve, if you're listening, I'm sorry I didn't get to your messages last week, but you were, Steve went on a tirade here. It's not about the pills. No. It's about dick and vagina without permission. Steve, really, you should have been put to this courtroom, huh? I mean, the messages are still here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, listen.
Shut up about the pills.
Apparently,
I don't know what a mistrial is. Do you know how that works and why it was a mistrial?
Well, I mean, all that I understand from the story is that they were deadlocked. So it sounds to me like between the 12 of them, 6 were for Cosby and then the other 6 were not.
But isn't Gareth, you would know obviously about this, because in jury, you have to have a result, right? Someone then swears someone else, because the OJ trial, again, that was a big jury case and they came to it. I mean, how does it get to a mistrial?
Don't know. This is a complete mystery to me, and I don't understand it. I mean, like, you know, Bill Cosby, this doesn't mean, by the way, he's off the hook. It means that they're going to have to start again.
Mm. Yes, because the other side said that they will definitely be going for a retrial. So they're not prepared to, you know, to take this as the final say. So they're prepared to go back into fighting. But, you know, these jurors apparently labored for more than 53 hours. That's over a day.
It's like being in a house arrest, this jury. Huh? You can't talk about the trial. You can't go anywhere. You've got to sit and deliberate.
But you're put up in a hotel.
Yeah, but can you imagine how exhausted you become and how your brain gets fried and, you know, like that, all those little intricacies. Thank you. They must play in on people's decision to, you know, either say yes or no.
Mm. Yeah, because eventually you think, screw it. You become so tired of hanging out with these people as well. Because they're not a jury of your peers. You don't want to hang out with people socially.
But I guess you sort of have faith in the system, because no one was just swung to make a decision. They actually all stood to their guns, and hence the status now. But I think, you know, I was hearing from a law expert over the weekend who said something along the lines of, the jury needs to comprise of men who have been in powerful positions of leadership and young women who have worked under those sort of men. So interns or women going up climbing the corporate ladder.
No, I mean, this is ridiculous. This is where identity politics starts getting involved.
But
all it is. Yeah. But this is bullshit. I mean, you're going to have 12 people. I think it's 12 who are chosen at random. And the only thing that disqualifies you is not who you are, man, woman, powerful, not powerful. Don't bring that shit into it. That's absolute nonsense. The only thing that disqualifies you is if you are related to the person, or you have a particular interest in the trial, or you show an outward bias from the get-go. And remember, both Cosby's lawyers and the prosecution can interview each of these jurors and say for these reasons they should be excluded. But certainly those things can come into it.
Yeah.
They just don't have to be the reason that you're either qualified or not, because that would be ridiculous. Otherwise, we're going to end up with juries that have to look like victims, and then it just gets messy from there on in. You either are guilty of a crime or you're not. It has nothing to do with your identity or the identity of your jury, surely.
But you really have to check out that show Bull that I keep telling you about, the one that was created by Dr. Philip McGraw.
Yeah.
I mean, really, because we have criticized the jury system in America on this show before. And like, really, all it is just a play on people's emotions. That's all it's about.
Yeah.
It's all
shit. Most of these jurors are really dumb people too. Yep. Like, they come out of nowhere and they don't have any understanding of the law. And they sit there and then they are forced to make a decision about someone's future. Are you kidding me?
So I know it's like citizenship something or the other, like you're forced to, or you're called up, you know, you don't.
It's duty. Yeah.
Yeah. It's duty.
It's the citizen's duty. Yeah.
How far ahead of time do you know? I wonder whose case you'll be sitting in on. Cause I'm sure you don't know ahead of time.
No, you don't know. You don't get advance warning. What they do is they call you up suddenly out of nowhere. And they say, oh, by the way, you've been selected for jury duty. Do you have a really good reason why you can't? And if you say, yes, I do, my job's very important. If I'm not there, the whole company will close down. Mm-hmm. Then they look for someone else. Or if it's something stupid, like you don't necessarily have time, they'll say to you, sorry, you've got to come and do it.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's a very weird way of doing things.
Let's
but
see.
You know what?
Yeah.
At least there are different systems. I'm going to try them all out and see what happens.
Indeed. Mops, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right, that's it for the news this morning. Brought to you, of course, by Kolkakia Pizzeria. Are you craving the 2-for-1? Well, it is Monday. So if you go to any Kolkakia Pizzeria today and order a gourmet pizza, you get the second one of a cheaper value for free. 2-for-1, Mondays. Come on, you know you deserve it.
Fantastic.
All right, it's time to get into some sport, and oh, wow, 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 what a sporting weekend it was. Gareth, did you catch any sport over the weekend?
Not a single drop, but I hear there was quite interesting golf yesterday.
Well, there was. Golf, rugby, football, football gossip. Yeah. So let's start with the Springboks, right?
Right.
I love my old music. I never get to hear it when you're here. So the rugby, the Bucks were obviously complete and utter horseshit in 2016, right? People were screaming at these guys, you're useless, go home, delete your careers, blah, blah, blah. Well, last week, very, very good win. Sorry, week before last, very good win against a French team. This week was against a full-strength French team, apparently. Well, they went 1 point better, so they're even more handsome a victory margin. And they looked bloody good in Durban. There's no doubt about it. People will always like kind of give these guys stick because of what's happened. But you've got to give credit to Alistair Goodseer and his coaching staff. Obviously, Brendan Fent has played a huge role in this. And they looked really just competent on both defense and attack. There was points where, of course, they tackled for a very long period, but the French did not look like scoring any stage, and they really buckled under pressure. So 37-15, the Springboks win that one. They wrap up the three-test series 2-0. And with the third test happening this weekend at Ellis Park at altitude again, well, the French basically might as well go home now. They're going to get absolutely hammered, and it's a really good confidence boost for this Bok team, who are just looking for anything they could take into rugby championships. That looked relatively respectable. Some really good performances across the board. Open Hojo won't be playing the third test. He was concussed. But Jean-Luc Dupriez, who came in as a replacement, looked bloody good in that number 7 jersey. Sio Kolisi was man of the match, and basically who everyone's talking about right now. But it was just a great all-round team performance. And again, people were going onto social media, and they seemed happy. It's very, very strange. You know, like the whole thing, if the Box are playing well, Twitter is less angry, less aggressive, and less violent. Well, for white people anyway.
Well, when we have any distraction, I mean, the same goes for all the other sports. If we've got something fun and exciting and happy to look at, we have less reasons to feel sorry for ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. To run through the rest of the international rugby from the weekend, Samoa, they took on New Zealand and were nothing more than punching bag, 78-0. New Zealand won that one. South Africa A played against the French Barbarians. This was like a sort of warm-up for the weekend of the Bok game, and they beat the French Barbarians 36-28. Fiji beat a Tier 1 nation for the first time, beating Italy 22-19. Ireland hammered Japan 50-22. And another big result was that Scotland beat Australia. Now, we know Australia, Super Rugby-wise, they're completely nutty useless, right? Now, Scotland, without the stars, the big stars who are in the British and Irish Lions tour, they beat Australia 24-19. Huge result there. England carry on against Argentina, winning that one 35-25. And the New Zealand Maoris, well, they took a bit of a hammering to the British and Irish Lions. So Warren Gatland is very, very confident and cocky ahead of that result. Because this Saturday is the first test, New Zealand versus the Lions. That's going to be absolutely massive. Also really huge in the weekend, Pakistan. Well, they were asked to bat first, and every team basically in the Champions Trophy this tournament who batted first have lost. But yeah, they really put it down. Fakhar Zaman, he scored 114. Fakhar Zaman. He scored 114. He was saying Fakhar to all the bowlers that day, and 338 is what they posted against India. So India do have a star-studded batting lineup, but that of course involved Virat Kohli. Well, they were 1 for none, 2 for 6, 3 for 33, 4 for 54, and 5 for 54. That was it. They were done and dusted. All out eventually for 158. So Pakistan win the Champions Trophy by 180 runs. That is such an absolute hammering. And of course, this is the team that does not play at home. They do not have a home ground. They are like the Lost Boys of cricket, to use a Peter Pan reference. But with Coach Mickey Arthur, who was once the Proteas coach, and he witnessed a choke or two, well, he's got a great tune out of these guys. Mostly inexperienced, mostly who knows where they come from. But Pakistan are just incredible, and the Proteas can really learn from them. If you watch the way they batted, they use their feet, they create a pressure on the bowlers, they didn't just stand back. And it's such a great example. So, you know, all the answers are there for the Proteas. I hate to kind of take it away from Pakistan, but the Proteas need to learn from these people going forward, because these guys always adapt, and they come to these tournaments and they just got a huge BMT, massive balls. This is what you want. This is what the Proteas haven't been showing. So that was a really big result there. And of course, the Proteas will stay in England right now. So they're going to T20s and then test matches, which I'll give you more info around closer to the time. There was lots of football over the weekend because the Confed Cup started. Now that is basically all the winners of all the nations, the continents around the world, and then obviously the host of the World Cup next year will be Russia, and then the defending champions, which are Germany. So Cameroon, well, they lost to Chile 2-0 first game out. Portugal, Mexico, well, it was a lackluster display with both teams throwing it away towards the end. This, they drew 2-2. And then the opening match, Russia beat New Zealand 2-0. I didn't realize New Zealand even played football. Basically, if you play football in New Zealand, you have to have an awkward conversation with your dad. You got to say, "Dad, I've been wearing some interesting clothes recently. I just want to tell you that I play football." And then basically they get disowned. And that's how it works in New Zealand culture. In other football news, it would appear that Ronaldo is unhappy about being called a tax fraud. So much so, he says, "Well, screw this, Spain. I shall go elsewhere." This was obviously just all allegations right now. And this is something he said, well, in camp with Portugal, the Confed Cup. He said, "Screw this. I'm no fraud." Basically, they're saying he's been defrauding Spanish authorities with offshore bank accounts over his image rights. So it got to the point where Zinedine Zidane apparently cut his holiday short to try and convince the star not to leave Real Madrid. But this is where the things get a bit hectic, though, because Real Madrid, essentially, like any other big club, they own these players. So if somebody wants to buy Ronaldo, the buyout clause is just stupid. We're talking hundreds of millions of pounds here just to kind of buy him out of his Real Madrid contract before he can play for anyone else. So rumors going around right now is that Ronaldo has asked his manager slash agent to get him back to Man United. Now, Ronaldo is 32. So although he's the greatest footballer in the world right now, he's the richest sportsman, he's incredible, all that kind of stuff, except doesn't have great hair. That is his only flaw, I guess, to be hypercritical. That's neither here nor there. But he's 32, so nobody's going to put a lot of money into him, because how many more years he got out of him? I know one good season could change so much, he's probably worth all the money. But it's such a difficult place to be. So he doesn't want to be at Real Madrid. He doesn't want to be in Spain. But no one else has the money. Like, you have to sell, like, your entire country to buy this guy out of his contract. So
wow.
Very interesting to see how it goes. But I'm pretty sure he won't be going to China, because now China got that new rule about taking in foreign players. So that's all very interesting.
But at this stage, who hasn't been accused of fraud football? And what's that saying, where there's smoke, there's fire? Yeah. Or am I just getting excited?
No, it's fine, Mubs. You get excited. But what I will say to that is that I agree with you. In other news of a sort of better nature, a Spanish matador has been mauled by a bull, which is always good, one for the bulls. And Michael Phelps is going to race a shark.
I'm sorry, he's what?
Michael Phelps is going to race a shark for Shark Week. Stupid, I know.
Are we going to get more context?
The guy was killed by the bull. That's funny.
Yeah, which, you know, I always like to celebrate that. And then obviously the Spanish press, who are all like savage bullfighters, they go, "Oh, what a tragedy." No, it's not a tragedy. He took on an animal that is above him in the food chain, would kill him every day possible. And he has his fancy outfit and his whatever. So this guy basically killed a bull earlier in the day. He severed the bull's ear in a display of absolute bravado, whatever. And then he died. So unlucky. What normally happens with bullfighters is they get hit by the horn, and then they get a punctured lung, and then they basically die.
Oh, wow. I always imagine those horns going into the swimsuit area.
Yep, they do go out. Yeah, they have done that too. But yeah, if you take a horn to the ribs, you're probably not going to be playing next week. So that's pretty much it for the sport. Anthea is right here in studio, which is always a great thing on a Monday.
Yeah,
Anthea had a long weekend, just like all of us, and she is back to work very hard for money this week. And of course, with it being a Monday, she'll always get her original soundtrack. That's the rule we kind of make around here. Right, Anthea. So, hang on a second. You are not that microphone. Damn it, I was doing so well. I mean, I was essentially flawless this morning, and then this happens.
You were.
Sorry, Anthea. I get flustered when I see you.
Oh.
There we go. Damn it, I screwed that up again.
Oh, dear.
Ben.
No, no. Okay. Well, you know, get it eventually. There we go. Hello.
How are we doing? Oh, look at that. I'm on.
Sleight of hand. There we go. What's going on in the finance?
Yeah, very busy day on Friday. It was derivatives closeout. And in the 15-minute closeout period, 29 billion rand went through the stock exchange, which is incredible.
Wow.
At the end of the day, we finished with $5.4 billion, which was 69.5 billion rand of trade, which is three times our normal daily average volume. Unfortunately, though, the mining charter came out, and that was all the story of the day. It really dragged on the JSE. Everything was down. Resources were down 2%. Financials were down 1%. Industrials down 1%. The rand was down 2%. I mean, some of the big counters, Assore Mining was down over 10%. Kumba Iron Ore was down over 7%. So was Amplats. Exxaro was down 7%. Anglo Gold was down. So it was just ridiculous. It was bloodshed on Friday.
Wow.
Yeah, and it really was all about the mining charter. I don't know what government think they're doing, to be honest. You know, I don't even know where to start with it, actually, because in South Africa, I think we're kind of used to this rhetoric of, you know, the government changing their mind. But I think the foreigners were really concerned. The new mining charter was very onerous. 30% of mines must be black owned within 12 months of the 2017 charter being in place. This is up from 26%. And they just, so many other things, like they have to procure 80% from black owned companies. The one that intrigues me, and I'm all for black females getting into management and onto boards, but they need 38% of middle management must be black females. I can't imagine that they even have that many females working in the mining sector, let alone to put them into middle management or onto the board. So the market really absolutely hated this new mining charter. In fact, the Chamber of Mines has said that they're going to take the Department of Mineral Resources to court over the mining charter. And of course you can.
Yeah, it's just like you're trying to force things that aren't going to work. How many women want to go into mining, for God's sake?
Well, exactly. That's the point. Like, and to force that, and instead of starting at the bottom and saying in education, let's spend some money on putting engineers or black female engineers or female engineers at least through university, they start at the top and hope that it will filter down. It doesn't work that way.
No, it's like a quick fix. You're trying to make it all happen without thinking it through. And then all you do is you create an unstable system, and then mining collapses. And mining is pretty much one of the few things we've got left in our economy.
Yeah, but Gareth, I saw something, and again, Anthony, maybe you could clear this up for me, that since 1994, mining in South Africa has basically halved, whereas in Brazil and Australia, Brazil, I think it's as much as tripled.
That's exactly right, yes.
Yeah, that's worrying. Again, it's not seeing big picture stuff here.
Well, so that's what the Chamber of Mines said. The reason they're taking the DMR to court is because of this new mining charter, or because of their insistence on these rules, they're losing investment in the sector, and that's exactly what has happened, Ben, since, well, I don't know what date it was, 94?
And of course, we've got a captured minister in charge of mining, Mosebenzi Zwani. And we know what's happened there. So, yeah, I mean, what do you expect to happen? Do you think it's going to grow? You can artificially engineer this situation to make it work for you? No.
Well, there's a lot of speculation that they're engineering it to work for a certain Indian family, because everybody else is disagreeing with it.
That sounds very vague, Anthea. You need to give us more than that.
Well, that's all I've heard. And then in the other sectors, of course, because of the weaker rand, financials were down. Brait was up 4%. Gareth, you'll be glad to know. It's making a little bit of a comeback. And industrials were also down. And of course, retailers got absolutely hammered on Thursday, because of it. Unfortunately, the weaker rand couldn't even help Naspers, even though they released a pretty good trading statement. Probably the most important feature to note from the Naspers trading statement is that core headline earnings will be up between 33% and 39% on the previous period. And it's only a trading statement, so there's not too much information, and it's difficult to read into it. But kind of if you extrapolate what is being said, the one thing they have kind of pointed to is that the sub-Saharan pay TV business is not doing that well. They've got rising development costs, as they put it. But then if you take out Tencent and Mail Ru, the losses in the rump in the other businesses have actually halved. And so that's a great thing, because really Naspers kind of private equity businesses are coming into its own. In fact, if you separated the unlisted and the listed associates alone represent 130% of Naspers' share price. So there's a 30% upside just on the listed stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, so unfortunately it fell to below 2,500 Rand a share on Thursday. But I'm guessing in the long term that'll come into its own.
Let's hope so.
And then some good news. Peregrine, which is an asset management business, reported results last week. Normalized headline earnings up 6% to 591 million rand. We do own a very small holding in the hashtag invest aggressive portfolio. It's a small cap share, but it's, and so therefore it's really volatile, as you would expect from a small cap. They said they're looking to unbundle their on balance sheet investments to release value to shareholders as they've now reached a billion rand value. And to unbundle anything less than a billion rand would cost too much. And, you know, so they have a hedge fund business, they have a Java advisory business, they have Citadel Wealth Management. So that should be quite interesting. Their annuity earnings increased by 24%. So a really nice little business, actually. Just, it's a shame it's a small cap and that it's so volatile. Otherwise, I think I would have probably had a bigger weighting in the portfolios. And then another share we spoke about last week when you asked me for a trading trading idea was Comair. They released their trading statement. They said headline earnings per share will be up at least 20%. So again, just a trading statement. So really not enough information, but we do know that the CEO has been making some very positive noises of late. You know, Comair took SAA to court and won a 1.1 billion rand claim that includes the interest, which is only 60% of the total claim. And Eric Venter, the CEO of Comair, has said that SAA have countersued them now. And because SAA have countersued, Comair have countersued.
What a mess.
I know. Just the lawyers get rich, right?
Yeah, they're the only ones who score out of this kind of thing.
Yeah, but the CEO of Comair is quite positive because he's actually noted in one of his comments that Cliff Decker, who were SAA's legal counsel, resigned when SAA, because their legal counsel had actually given guidance for SAA to not countersue or whatever the legal term is.
Wow, that sounds very messy.
Don't you wish you were a lawyer?
No.
Oh, okay.
I would rather be proud of myself and go to sleep at night without having a guilty conscience.
Yeah, who needs lots of money anyway, right?
Yeah, it's awful. Imagine being a lawyer. How sad and depressing.
No. I'm going to stick to what I do. Yeah. I like what I do.
Yeah. People, you know, some lawyers like what they do, Gareth. Leave them alone.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, Anthea, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That's unfortunately a wrap from me, guys. I'll update you on the conference tomorrow and give you lots more info about Germany and plenty of other exciting stuff.
Very good. Gareth, are you going to any other German cities while you're there?
Frankfurt is another one that's on the list, and possibly for a few hours, Cologne.
Okay, because Ashley was just asking here if you thought Berlin is nicer than Munich, but I take it you're not going there.
I haven't been to Munich, unfortunately, no. I really want to go to Munich. It's Mubs has been there. She will tell you more than I can, but it's apparently very picturesque, very beautiful, very kind of the way that picture postcards of Germany would look.
Okay,
is that about right, Mubs?
Yeah, but I haven't been to Berlin, so I have nothing to compare it to. So I wouldn't be able to answer that question either. Is it better than Berlin?
Berlin, in the words of our listener, Stefan, who lives in Berlin, he said to me, it's like someone emptied out a bin full of Lego blocks and said, there we go, build.
Okay. Interesting description.
It's a real mix. You've got old, new, modern, classical, all kinds of architecture, Bauhaus architecture, everything you can imagine in Berlin, because obviously parts of the city are brand new. They were bombed into dust, and other parts have been restored and are very, very old. So it's a completely mixed up city.
All right, Gareth, well, we know you've got a very busy week, so we're going to give some thoughts to what presents we want, and we'll just let you know. So you don't have to just take that.
I might already have that in mind. So I might already have bought you some presents.
Ah.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
All right, cool. All right, Gareth, we'll catch you tomorrow. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks,
very interesting.
Yeah.
Have a great time. Right. So,
cool. Thanks, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Bye, Gareth. Okay, right. So last week we had, I told you there'd be a theme for the music, right? Mm-hmm. This week.
Here we go.
Okay, so I'm going to play the track, and then while this track is playing, you've got to try guess what the theme of the week's music is. Sounds fair, right?
So is it one theme per show or one recurring theme the entire week?
Basically, all of this week, while Gareth's away, there's a theme to the music. So you need to guess what that theme is. You've got just over 4 minutes to try work this out.
I guess... Okay. Let's roll with this.
Okay. So, catch you back after that. More news with Mubs, lots of new stories. Of course, I will bring you what's happened in the golf last night. I ran out of time in the sport, and I'm not just going to crunch it in.
CliffCentral.com